you know, to get kind of the value-added return of putting it in a packet and selling it to local gardeners. I wouldn't say that there's, I mean, I feel like I could still count on my fingers maybe to fully organic, 100% organic seed companies. So it's not something that is really like on a tear and super widespread, but it's definitely growing, and there's more and more of them every year.
Oh, well, Brian, thanks very much. And Andrew, thank you very much for joining us on KBOO this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We've been talking about sustainable foods and biodiversity with Andrew Still of Adaptive Seeds, which is based in Sweet Home, Oregon, and Brian Campbell of Uprising Seeds. He's based in Bellingham, Washington. You can learn more about Adaptive Seeds by going to their website, adaptiveseeds, all one word, .com. And Uprising Seeds, you can learn about by going to their website, uprisingorganics, all one word, also, .com. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
For decades, KBOO News and Public Affairs has welcomed radical and spirited activists to share their actions in the Northwest and beyond. KBOO is central to connecting the world to what is happening in Cascadia. We put the mic in everyone's hands. Help amplify the stories of people in your own backyard. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter. And thank you for your support of KBOO.
Tune in to KBOO March 8th for a 24-hour celebration of women through music, cultural, and public affairs programming in honor of International Women's Day. From 5:30 a.m. on March 8th to 5:30 a.m. the next day, KBOO will continue our annual tradition of celebrating the achievements of women, as well as pushing for parity, recognition, equity, and equality for women and women-identified folks in our community and in our world. The schedule for the March 8th 24-hour celebration of International Women's Day is posted at kboo.fm/IWD2018.
The time is 6:01 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Again, KBOO's Kickstarter is currently underway. Check it out, kboo.fm/Kickstarter. It is now time for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. This is Jamie Partridge, your host. And I have two guests with us tonight, Camilo Marquez with Green Jobs Initiative. Oh, hello, Camilo.
Good evening, Jamie.
I'm sorry, Portland Clean Energy and Justice Measure, right? And we have Alyssa Pagan with the International Women's Strike.
Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Alyssa. So you're listening to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. And our guests tonight will be talking about what seem to be two very different topics, Green Jobs Initiative and International Women's Strike, but we're intersectional here, right?
Yes.
Okay. Camilo, tell us about this Portland Clean Energy and Justice Measure and why you got involved.
Well, first of all, I'd like to just sort of change the way you've described it as clean energy jobs. It's really essentially an environmental justice program that is in the context of energy conservation. It has been referred to as the Portland Just Energy Initiative, or Portland Just Energy Transition Initiative, and it's been worked on for the past 2 years by a number of different community organizations, and the initiative has been submitted to the city council. There is a challenge, and the name that we have may eventually be different, but we're referring to it presently as the Portland Just Energy Transition Initiative. The way that I got into it, I used to be a healthcare reform activist, and I kind of burned out on that. And I got involved in 350PDX, which is one of the main sponsors of the collaborative that developed the program.
And what is 350PDX?
350PDX is the Portland local chapter of 350.org, and it's an environmental climate change organization.
What's the significance of 350?
350 is the parts per million of carbon or other greenhouse gases above which we are in peril of the temperature going up. We're already above 400.
Gotcha. So you got involved with 350PDX.
And they have a number of active programs in climate change, and I decided that I would focus on this specific program.
Mm-hmm. So this initiative, as I understand it, draws together environmental and communities of color coalitions. Well, that's unusual and exciting. How did that happen?
Well, I think this is one of the remarkable things about this program, that it was developed by this collaborative, and I will mention the organizations that are involved. NAYA, the Native American Youth Family Organization, Verde, a Latino environmental organization, NAACP, APANO, Coalition of Communities of Color, the Sierra Club of Northwest, the Audubon Society, and OPAL.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about why the communities of color are involved in this project. And first of all, can you be a little bit more specific about what the project involves? What is it that people are doing, raising money for, whatever?
Well, that goes to the question of the name of the organization, which is Just Transitions. What does Just Transitions mean? Just Transitions means that climate change has disparate effects on different communities. We know that climate change is caused by industrial countries in the global north, what affects mainly the societies and nations in the global south. Even within industrial countries, the impact of climate change is disparate. If you listen today, for example, to Democracy Now!, you would have heard about what's going on in Houston. And you can ask yourself, what has been the result of the devastation, and which communities have been affected, which communities have seen improvement? And you know that it's the poor and the communities of color that have suffered the worst. And that's what this is intended to address.
And how would it address that?
The program is involves a ballot initiative that will be on the November ballot. It is to have a surcharge on the Portland business tax on companies that have over $500,000 of business inside the city of Portland and $1 billion nationwide. Mm-hmm. This will raise approximately $30 million that will be leveraged 2 or 3 times by matching with other funds of organizations that are working in this area. It will be a program whereby community agencies and organizations submit proposals for clean energy jobs, job training, weatherization, and these will be selected and monitored by a council that is going to be named by the city council. Mm-hmm. A council meaning a commission, so to speak.
So you mentioned weatherization as one of the clean energy jobs. What other kinds of clean energy we're talking about here?
The other aspect of the program will be a sustainable energy program such as solar, for example.
So you're talking about folks going into private homes and businesses to improve the weatherization, in other words, the loss of heat and like that inside of homes, putting in insulation as well as installing solar panels on the roofs? Is that
exactly
what you're talking about?
Okay. That's to train people from the community to do these jobs.
So why should working class people, particularly folks in labor unions, care about this initiative?
Well, it will provide opportunity for training. It will provide opportunity for trade union members and laborers to be involved in these projects. It will create a pool of trained workers that, if they become unionized, will support that movement. It's something that's going to benefit the entire community, but particularly poor communities, working class communities. There's also a aspect of the program that has to do with sustainable agriculture.
Hmm. Well, I've looked at the final language of the ballot initiative, and it gives preference to union apprenticeship programs. I know that the electrical workers, laborers, the drywallers, the carpenters, all those folks will be involved with this weatherization and solarization. And of course, if the unions aren't involved on the ground floor, it'll go non-union. So we in the labor movement need to be thinking about getting involved. And if these apartments are being upgraded, for example, low-income apartments, weatherized, solarized at little cost to the owner, what prevents the landlord from raising the rent?
I mentioned before that there's going to be a commission that's selected by the city council to administer the program. And it's not in the language of the measure, but once the measure is passed, rules will be elaborated. And among the rules will be a requirement that any landlord who has improvements done under this program will not raise rents for 10 years.
So folks will be paying less for energy, for electricity, et cetera, because of weatherization, and the rents will not be raised. Sounds good. So finally, how do you answer the critics, and this is the mainstream media, that label this a sales tax?
Well, it's not a sales tax. It's a fee, a surcharge. But the important thing about this to remember is that these are national corporations that sell their products nationwide. So I don't believe that Apple has a price for its computer in Idaho and another price in Illinois. It's very unlikely that you're going to see any impact in the prices. People who have studied this question say that it will raise the cost of a hamburger by 4 cents.
Oh, my. Well, my union has endorsed this initiative, this Portland Clean Energy and Justice measure. I'm with the Letter Carriers Union, and I know the county workers are on board. How can our listeners who want to get involved, want to support, find out more or to get involved? What is the timeline? What's happening?
Well, right now there is a challenge. So the issue is in court. We're waiting for the judge's decision to find out whether the challenge is going to be effective. And I mean, if so, it may be appealed. So we have to wait until that decision is made. But we expect that will come fairly soon. And the plan is for us to start petitioning in April.
All right. So if folks want to get involved with the petition drive, for example, or have their organization endorse or contribute money, how do they get in touch?
We have a website, the PortlandJustEnergyTransition.com.
PortlandJustEnergyTransition.com.
Correct.
All right. Thank you, Camilo Marquez. And you're listening, if you just turned in, you're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. This is we're in the middle of our Kickstarter campaign, and if you want to help us make Portland a city of media makers, go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter and help fund this great project. I'm going to move us into the second half of the show now with Alyssa Pagan, who's going to tell us about the International Women's Strike. Alyssa, tell us about what this International Women's Strike is and how you got involved.
Yeah, the International Women's Strike started last year with a call from women around the world, particularly in India, Mexico, and Poland, who had been dealing with some gender injustice that they knew needed to be turned around where they were. But a lot of these women are very, very politically savvy and realize that any fight for justice must be global, and reached out to women, particularly feminists, particularly working class feminists around the world, who shared their ideas and called on them to link their struggles to an international feminist movement that would bring forward the rejection of what we would call corporate or executive feminism, and indeed against imperialist feminism, that would have us think that we can be feminists in our own countries and only in our own countries, and it's okay to support our governments and our military to go and bomb to smithereens women and their children in other countries, and to keep women in poverty in the U.S. We know that that is not something that we would call feminism. So in the U.S., the call last year was for women to come together and raise the question of the strike once again. And we know that that's been something that's been dormant because of sometimes we have some conservatism in union leadership. So the strike weapon is something that has not been used as much as many of us would like to see. So I was back home in New York City last year when the International Women's Strike was happening. And I went down to Washington Square Park with my video camera and just wanted to film what was happening on the day. And I was pleasantly surprised when I got a message from some of the organizers who had seen the video after I edited it and posted it. They said, oh, we think you're pretty good, and would you like to join us? Would you like to be on our team? So I said yes, and before I knew it, I was facilitating meetings and groups and trying to do facilitation work and coalition building. And now I am fully committed to the project of IWS, the International Women's Strike.
So you're talking about working class feminism, or feminism for the 99%?
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we remember the rallying cry of the Occupy movement. We are the 99%. Indeed, it was the Occupy movement in Zuccotti Park and Occupy Wall Street that made me rethink my life, really, and how I would engage with other people. I had never really thought about my own poverty outside of, I don't know, adults in my life that didn't quite have their stuff together, that were poor and oppressed, and I didn't really think about where this oppression was coming from, whether this poverty was linked to a system. And it was the Occupy movement that made me look at big banks, that made me look at capital proper as the source of the oppression and poverty that I was experiencing. So I was very happy to get involved with the Occupy movement, and the question of the 99% was very important to me.
So is the International Women's Strike part of the, or how is the International Women's Strike part of the Me Too, the hashtag Me Too movement? And the women's marches of the past year. Is there a connection there between the International Women's Strike and the hashtag Me Too movement, or the women's strike, or the women's marches, which of course we know were the largest protest ever in U.S. history? What was that, just a year ago?
Well, Tarana Burke was the person that started Me Too. And she is certainly what we would call an intersectional feminist, and a Black woman who has not gotten nearly enough attention or accolades, really, for what she has contributed to the feminist movement. So the question of the International Women's Strike, and particularly the question of working class feminism, speaks a lot to Me Too, because while the Me Too movement has featured
a lot of famous women who are wealthy already. And of course, we would say that no, they do not deserve to experience sexual assault or sexual harassment. And we know that usually it is women who are in low-wage jobs that experience the most sexual harassment. In fact, in many low-wage jobs that women count on tips are the ones that they will often experience some of the most outright sexual harassment, because their tip and thus their livelihood may very well depend on it. So the International Women's Strike brings that question to the floor and politicizes it through the question of the strike if we withhold our labor.
Mm-hmm. And what is it? What is the connection to the women's marches? Or is there a connection?
We think that the women's march is a very significant step forward in terms of building a feminist movement. It was incredible to see the more than a million people that poured into the streets of Washington, D.C., where I was. And it helped to establish a tone of resistance, not just in Washington, D.C., but all over the country, and even in some places in the world where they had actions on that day. So in terms of speaking out against this president's misogyny, yes, we absolutely applaud the women's strike. And many of us in the International Women's Strike want to see a movement that is more pointedly anti-imperialist and for the working class and poor, and is not afraid of using the strike weapon.
And in Portland, the sponsor is Don't Shoot Portland.
It is.
A local Black Lives Matter movement. Yeah. So how did that happen? What's that about?
Well, I've been working with Don't Shoot Portland for some time. I lived here for a few years and went back home, which is how I got involved with the International Women's Strike in New York City. And when I was able to come back here, I immediately got to work to build an IWS action, hopefully an IWS group that will be sustained here in Portland, because last year there wasn't one. And I think that that's unfortunate, but I'm happy to remedy that, and I hope that people will want to help me. But I will say that it is important that it's Don't Shoot Portland that's bottom lining the International Women's Strike here, because we know that Black women are among the most oppressed in society, that are disproportionately in low-wage jobs and experience sexual harassment and abuse and are marked for state violence. And the list goes on and on. And it's very important, I think, to very consciously link racial and gender justice movements and discourse whenever possible. And Don't Shoot Portland, bottom lining the International Women's Strike, I think is a very important piece of that work. And I think it is at least worth mentioning as well that me and the leadership, and me being a trans woman, is not inconsequential, that we know the feminist movement has some mixed ideas. And there is a phenomenon we might call TERFism, T-E-R-F, trans exclusionary radical feminism, that some women who consider themselves to be feminists still subscribe to. And they should know that the International Women's Strike, not just in Portland, not just in the U.S., but all over the world, is being bottom-lined and organized by cis, meaning not trans, and trans women together in solidarity. And those ideas are not a part of our platform.
All right.
Alyssa, you've brought us back to the theme of intersectionality. Jamie, do you want to sort of make a general comment about what that means?
Do I want to make a comment? I'm the host. Y'all are the guests. Alyssa, want to make a comment?
Yeah, intersectional feminism. Thank you for asking that question. I should not assume that people know exactly what I'm talking about when I say these things. Intersectional feminism or intersectionality is a practice and an understanding of oppression as being linked for certain people that are in precarious social locations. So Black women experience sexism and racism simultaneously all the time, and many of us feel that the fight against both have to feature both and cannot ask us to leave some of those oppressions behind when we are fighting.
So I just want to make a brief comment about intersectionality. And if you picture the Venn diagram and you have these circles that overlap, that's an image of how different organizations have shared issues. That's what intersectionality is about. It means we come out of our silos and work together in solidarity. But I want to point something out, that if you think of these circles and you think of an even larger circle that covers the entire layout, what effect would that have? And if that is the circle that the Coke and company is trying to obliterate, then we are of necessity must unite in order to resist this, because we are facing the end of democracy as we know it.
Thank you, Camilo. I'm part of an organization that has endorsed the International Women's Strike, Portland Jobs with Justice.
Yes.
Coalition of 120, mostly labor unions. We're calling out our members to participate in this one-hour strike. So how is this strike connected to labor unions, well, Alyssa, in your view?
Thank you. Many labor unions across the world are endorsing and bottom-lining and turning their members out for the International Women's Strike and for other International Women's Day actions. In the U.S., we are very heartened by labor unions, whether they're locals or at the national level, that are stepping up to support social justice efforts, that are turning away from the business unionism of old and are turning towards social justice unionism. And the International Women's Strike is a fantastic way to plug in my opinion. I know I'm a little biased here, but obviously the name in and of itself, the International Women's Strike, it raises the question of the strike weapon as a way to get what it is that we need. So this is a political strike. This is not a strike against a boss or a number of bosses, but it is a strike against patriarchy itself. And we must start somewhere. So we know that in other countries, there will be full day mobilizations and strikes where the labor movement is more advanced, at least in terms of their ability and willingness to turn people out into the streets. In the United States, this is not something that we see as much as we would like to today, but we must start somewhere. And if the women's strike is successful, it will be part of the group that contributes to reawakening a more militant labor movement.
Thank you.
You know that I'm the delegate from 350 PDX to Jobs with Justice, and we are going to lead a campaign for Jobs with Justice to endorse the Portland Just Energy Transition, and we expect to accomplish that at the April meeting.
Oh,
and
thank
I'm
you.
Encouraging all members to support it.
Thank you, Camilo. And thank you, Alyssa and Camilo, Alyssa Pagan and Camilo Marquez. Alyssa, please tell our listeners how they can find out more about the International Women's Strike or how they can get involved.
Thank you. The International Women's Strike has a website, International Women's Strike on Google. You can just Google it, or womensstrikeus.org, where you can find out about our platform. It's very detailed and well-written and beautiful, I think. Beautiful artwork by some of our fine art and graphic artists in the U.S. and around the world, and indeed where you can donate. And if people in Portland are interested in volunteering, they can absolutely get in touch with me. I'm Alyssa Pariah, AlyssaPariah. That's on all social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Gmail.
All right. Alyssa Pagan and Camilo Marquez, that wraps it up for Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30.
Thank you very, very much.
The only program of its kind in Oregon or Southwest Washington. And before we move on to Prison Pipeline, let me just announce that this Wednesday, there's going to be some dramatic action with the Village of Hope houseless community and Portland Tenants United against evictions and sweeps. If you want to be part of a dramatic action at City Council for the houseless and for tenants' rights, 9:15 at Portland City Council Chambers.
I'll be there.
All right. And here we go, off to Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
It's now easier than ever for somebody to make and distribute music, but it's much harder to be noticed. It's difficult for me to find the independent artists that I'm interested in through all of the choices. And it's a big part of the responsibility of KABU and other independent cultural institutions to bring attention to new local artists and musicians and help break through that clutter. KABU understands the importance of expression, and we need your help to make a city of media makers where we can all express ourselves artistically and freely. This is the power of KABU. Invest in future media makers and join us on Kickstarter today. Go to kboo.fm/Kickstarter, and thank you for your support of KABU.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Feet to the Fire campaign Peaceful Protest on Wednesday, February 28th at 10 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse in Oregon City. This peaceful protest happens monthly outside of one of the county courthouses where community members are struggling for justice for their loved ones lost.